Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome to the show. Hey, guess what? It's Friday. Again. Oh, congratulations. I know, I'm pretty excited about it too. Alright, today on the show, we'll have Annie Robbins from the Mondo Weiss blog. You know, I've been reading her for a long time, but I've never talked with her before. But she's going to be on the show to talk about some interesting stuff. Lots of interesting stuff. Yeah, she's been writing there for a long time. And then, you know, I was trying to get Murtaza Hussein from The Intercept, one of Glenn Greenwald's guys there at firstlook.com/The Intercept. Or is it .org? I don't know. Whatever. Anyway. And usually this would be Trevor Aronson's beat, but all right. It's a great one about the Fort Dix pizza plot. Remember that? It's been a few years, but debunked in real time on this show, of course, right away. Just another terrorism entrapment case. Only in this one, I don't want to really spoil it for you, but let's just say that, they didn't actually even succeed in entrapping the two guys, but then they just convicted them anyway because the jurors suck. The guys actually had not agreed to anything. But they were just, rounded up in the same case, so. I don't know, they all look alike to me, I guess, the jury decided. It's a sad one, I don't know, they all are. I guess the one that really gets me the worst is Hamid Hayat out there in Lodi, California, where the informant, there were no groups to infiltrate, really. I mean, there was the local mosque, but they weren't going to put up with any nonsense there. And so he infiltrated a family, a father and a son. I guess the mom had died or something. And it was one of those things where he became such a close friend of the family. He's calling the dad, dad. And the dad's calling him son. And he's acting like he's the, stepbrother, basically, for the boy. And then eventually just basically browbeats the kid into saying he loves Osama, and then the FBI browbeats the kid into making the most ridiculous claims about, his grandfather who lived in Pakistan. Now, fine, if you say so, is fine, he lives in Kandahar in Afghanistan, and yes, he has a giant basement where Al-Qaeda trains, including in their pole vaulting techniques, because the kid, he's making it up, but he does his hands like he's holding a stick, like stick fighting, right? And the FBI agent, for a while, the LA Times had the video that they got of the FBI agent questioning the kid. And the kid pantomimes a stick in his hand, and the FBI agent says, "Pole vaulting? They're pole vaulting?" And the kid's like, "Yeah, they're pole vaulting. Al-Qaeda is practicing pole vaulting in my grandfather's basement in Kandahar." So the jury, of course, agreed that all these people are guilty of material support for terrorism. Despite the fact that this is the most ridiculous nonsense in the history of nonsense. Anyway, thank God for government. Otherwise, you'd have been killed over and over again by now, right? He can't do it, but he's going to be on the show on Monday, he said. So that's cool. And then Mark Perry is going to be on the show. Let's see, where the hell is this piece again? Oh, it's in Politico magazine. Last we spoke with him, he was writing in Al Jazeera English, I guess. Or America.AlJazeera.com. Well, this is a really long one, and it's the Pentagon's fight over fighting China. The Joint Chiefs keep ordering up ambitious new war plans, but their biggest battle might be with each other. That's at Politico magazine. Politico.com/magazine. I don't know. I guess I need to figure out who is the editor over there, because they keep turning out some pretty good journalism, I think. And I like Mark Perry. He's not a libertarian or even, I think, a principled non-interventionist or anything. But he breaks some good stories. He does some good journalism. He used to write for Foreign Policy. Now he's at Al Jazeera and here at the Politico thingamo whatever. All right, so that's cool, too. All right. I guess before we get too much further with the news or anything, better tell you about how you can win a trip to Costa Rica.
Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation in the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle.
All right, guys, so there's that. scotthorton.org/donate, scotthorton.org/raffle. Find the link at the top of the page there if you want to win a trip to Costa Rica. And, hey, tell your friends about it too, man. Drawing's on the 15th. You go whenever you want. All right, cool. Now, well, we got some terrorist attacks and stuff to talk about, I guess, in the next segment. But for right now, I just want to say the good news about the Supreme Court gay marriage decision. And, you know, it's times like this where conservatives just reveal themselves for the conservatives that they are. It's really gross. They like to say things like, well, I don't see the words gay married in the Constitution anywhere. You don't, really? Because right there, Amendment number 1, free association. Amendment number 9, just because this is a partial list of restrictions against government power does not mean it's a definitive list of all rights retained by human beings who are born free, stupid. That's the exact words of the 9th Amendment. And then, of course, the 14th Amendment, equal protection. Now, personally, I'm not for even having a national government at all. I think there really shouldn't be a U.S. Supreme Court. But it's pretty disingenuous when Antonin Scalia... Well, I didn't read his whole dissent. I kind of looked at it a little bit, but I got the gist of it, I believe, at least part of it, where he's saying that the Supreme Court is acting as though they are legislators here, and he even complains that there are no Protestants on the court. It's all Catholics and Jews on the court. They're all from New York and Harvard and Yale, and they're not representative enough of the American people to make a decision like this. But he's got it all wrong. The point is that even a super-duper majority of 99% of the population does not have the right, do not have the authority to violate the rights of other people. And the Supreme Court has the jurisdiction, I guess, since incorporating in the 14th Amendment and all that, you know, post-Civil War stuff, they have the jurisdiction to strike down state laws that violate people's rights. So that's what they did. And the fact that conservatives are running around crying that the only rights that a human could possibly have, in fact, other humans don't even have rights at all. The only rights that an American could possibly have are the ones explicitly listed in there. And in fact, they're trying to get rid of a lot of those too. Torture, yeah, never mind the 5th and 8th Amendment bans on torture. We can do that if we like. You know. 5th Amendment, due process of law. Yeah. As far as the conservatives are concerned. They like guns. They don't really believe in the right to bear arms because they don't really believe in rights. They don't really believe that individual human beings are born free and have the right to defend their life with lethal force if it comes down to it. Immediate and proportionate defense. They don't believe that. They just like guns. You know, you see the NRA rallying around black people getting gunned down just for having a gun by the cops. Nah, they're guilty as hell if they're even armed at all, according to conservatives. So conservatives, in other words, don't believe in freedom at all because they're terrible authoritarians.
So you're a libertarian and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Okay, guys, it's summer fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. Bills are piling up and equipment is wearing out. So here's the deal. Anyone who donates $50 or more gets a chance to win a week's vacation for two to Costa Rica. Drawing is July 15th. Winner, go whenever you want. See more details at scotthorton.org/raffle. Anyone who donates $100 or more gets entered into the raffle, plus a 1-ounce silver QR code commodity disc from commoditydiscs.com. And the first 25 people to donate $100 or more will also get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Why We Must Abolish the Income Tax by Sheldon Richman, or the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me, for free. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate or scotthorton.org/raffle for details. You can also sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal, per interview at Patreon, support with Bitcoin, and shop through scotthorton.org/Amazon. And thanks.
All right, cool. Now back to the news. All right. Annie Robbins is going to be on the show here in just a little while to talk about Israel-Palestine. In fact, I got some things to say about that here, but let me just tell you the news in case you don't know. There was a terrorist attack in France where the guy, they say that they knew who he was from back when, an Islamist type guy. They, I guess, weren't following him too closely. They're too busy reading your email to be reading his. He went and attacked a helium factory and I guess other kinds of gases and killed, a couple of people. Oh, two injured. One guy was killed and decapitated. Maybe that's how he was killed. I don't know. And the guy stuck his head up on the fence as he attacked the place. Then I don't know exactly how simultaneously these attacks took place or anything like that, but many killed in attack on Tunisian beach resort. Dozens killed in an attack on a hotel at the Tunisian beach resort of Sousse. The resort is popular among European tourists. At least 27 people, including foreign nationals, were killed. And gunmen opened fire at the hotel, and then eventually the cops killed them, they say. One guy with an AK got 27 people. And then in Kuwait, suicide attacker hits Shiite mosque, kills 25, 202 wounded. And I don't know whether Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State or both are claiming credit for this kind of thing, but man, I don't know. There was a time when the Bin Ladenites were a few raving lunatics on street corners that nobody listened to or paid attention to or cared about. And now, just like America's sock puppet dictator, Hosni Mubarak, who support for him in part helped lead to the terrorist war against the United States in the first place, but he warned, man, you get rid of Saddam Hussein and cause a war there, you're going to create 10,000 Bin Ladens. And that's exactly what they've done. Spread it around the entire region. And it's just the law of numbers. You know, I remember 10 years ago talking with Michael Scheuer, the former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit. And he's saying, you know, he's complaining about the war in Afghanistan and whatever. And then he's saying, but Iraq, by invading Iraq and turning the entire west and northwest of the country into jihadistan, he's given the Bin Ladenites direct access to the Levant. Syria's next. And maybe Israel someday. Probably Lebanon before that. But, you know, in other words, circa a decade ago, he was saying, oh man, it's on now. And why? Because of what all America had done wrong. You know, on September 12th, we had 99.999% of the population of the planet on our side. And then just completely blew it. And
you know, not for like claiming credit's sake, but just to point out that it's a real thing, I think. Myself and my guests have been saying on this show since 2011 that for America to double down on Bush's mistake of creating a Sunni-based insurgency to resist his war on behalf of Iran and Iraq, for Obama to turn around and back those same Sunni insurgents in Libya and then in Syria this whole time, is the highest of treason, and it is certainly going to bring attacks on Europe and then eventually America. And, you know, it's easy for copycats, and there's so many copycats and wannabe ISIS attacks that have been busted lately. I think some of them might not even be FBI setups. I can't keep up with them all. But I think there are some where, you know, people are getting the idea that they want to participate in this kind of thing. I don't know. They may all be entrapments still. But there's been a lot of them lately. And we have certainly seen, and look, I mean, we have a big ocean and all that kind of thing, but the borders are porous and somebody could get through. People could get through. And it doesn't take much, as we've seen here. One guy with an AK can do a lot of damage in a situation. As we saw a week ago in South Carolina, one guy with a 45. But in Europe, we've already seen there was an attack on a synagogue, museum type thing in Brussels. More than a year ago now, before the declaration of the Caliphate, right? It was like in the spring, there were two or three attacks in the spring of 2014 after Fallujah, but before Mosul, right? And then, of course, there's the Charlie Hebdo thing where, one attacker was, you know, at least claimed ISIS. The other apparently had affiliations with Al-Qaeda. And, you know, they say no daylight between Israel's foreign policy and America's foreign policy. And yet, the 9/11 hijackers, they may have been avenging the Palestinians, and they were. That's what they claimed that they were doing. That's what the people who recruited them claimed that they were doing, too. But Israel's enemies, in the minds of their, national security state, are led by Iran. It's Iran, Syria, and Hezbollah that they're worried about, and I guess less so Hamas, which does get some Iranian backing, even though they're a Sunni group. So that's their problem. And so they're perfectly happy, as we've seen, to support Al-Qaeda in Syria right now because their enemy is Assad. And that's why America's doing it, too. You can look at Barack Obama's interview with Jeffrey Goldberg in 2012 in The Atlantic when Goldberg says, hey, wouldn't backing the rebellion against Assad in Syria, isn't that a good way that we could help to weaken Iranian influence? And Obama says, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. And I can't tell you too much about it because it's classified. And he cracks a little joke along the lines of, I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. Not exactly, but he says, you don't quite have the clearance for me to let you know exactly what it is that we're doing. But yes, that's what we're doing. And you can just look up Michael Oren when he was still Netanyahu's ambassador, not later when he sort of claimed to be speaking for himself, but then he kept saying, from Israel's point of view, anyway. But Michael Oren, when he was still Israel's ambassador, he told the Jerusalem Post, we wanted Assad gone from the beginning of this thing, and we've been working for it all the time. And if we have to pick between these bad guys and those bad guys, we prefer these bad guys because those bad guys are backed by Iran. And he is specific. He's not talking about, the so-called mythical moderate Free Syrian Army. He elaborates again to Jeffrey Goldberg. Just type in Oren, O-R-E-N, Sunnis, and you'll find it. That he's talking about the Islamic State.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back. It's the Scott Horton Show. I'm him. Our first guest on the show today is Annie Robbins, editor-at-large over at Phil Weiss's blog, Mondo Weiss. He's got a whole stable of great writers over there. She's one of them. Welcome to the show, Annie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling me, Scott. It's an honor to be here.
Very happy to have you here. Your phone sounds kind of funny. Maybe jiggle your cord a little bit.
Okay, I can hear you fine.
Okay, that's better. We will move ahead. We'll move forward and see how it goes. I bet it'll be all right. So first and foremost, lots to talk about. But first and foremost, foreign direct investment in Israel dropped by 50% in 2014. From what to what? How big of a deal is that?
Well, I think it's a radical deal. I think we're seeing the effects of years of, efforts by the BDS movement and also just the gradual awakening of the public to the consequences of dealing with Israel, and that basically it's just a bad investment. It's common sense that it's a bad investment.
Mm-hmm. And now, so what kind of dollars are we talking about? It's how many billions decreased from what to what?
Oh, I actually don't know the specifics of the billions. I think that it's not, I don't think that that's the main focus here. I think the focus is on why it's decreasing. The expert that I wrote about in Israel said it was a combination of last summer's war and BDS.
Well, it says here, and it's in, I guess, Israeli dollars or whatever. I'm not familiar with the symbol, actually. It's not U.S. dollars, but maybe it is the symbol for the shekel, but they're saying down from 10 billion to 5.7, 10.5 to 5.7. So that's huge, right? That's more than all American
amount.
Aid to Israel every year.
It's a huge amount of money.
Yeah, huge amount. So I'm just saying it's not like we're going from, 100 million to 50 million. We're talking about billions and billions of dollars.
No, we're talking
here.
About billions of dollars. But you're seeing the effect here of years in the making. I believe, I mentioned in my article that back in 2013, we reported that investment committees for European banks were considering recommending their institutions borrow loans to Israeli companies with economic links to the occupied territories. And these investment committees, I don't think they're looking at whether someone should boycott or not. They're looking at what a good investment is. And ultimately, these banks or any investor.
Wait, sorry. I'm sorry, Annie, your phone just got all screwy on us again.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's better. That's better. Go ahead.
Okay. People, investors could become complicit in not only just morally what's going on over there, but because Palestine is going to the International Criminal Court, and they just yesterday, they went and submitted documents, including the crime of apartheid, war crimes, crimes against prisoners, and 23 counts in all. In fact, we have an excellent article up by our Ramallah correspondent, Allison Degger, right now with an exclusive about that. And so at the time, 2 years ago, I think it was referred to as an economic tsunami if something like this happened. Mm-hmm. The mother of all fears, it was called by Haaretz journalist. And, or I think that was the Israeli government. I think it was Bennett. So, this is this tsunami, so to speak, has been building for a long time. And what we're seeing in the last year is we're really seeing an explosion of press about it. But it's been building for 10 years. The BDS movement has been building for 10 years, and there's just so much more awareness now. And people really talking about it and not having fear talking about what's going on in Palestine and Israel.
Mm-hmm. And now the BDS movement, I don't know if there's a good metaphor you could use or something. I don't know. Is there a way that you could help us to understand maybe miles per hour or something, just how big it's grown, how fast it's moving compared to what it was a few years ago?
Well, you know, I'd say it seems to me that it's growing exponentially. I'm not an expert on the BDS movement. Of course, I'm part of it. I support it. You know, I'm not a spokesman for it by any means, but it seems that the growth on campuses, and certainly since, I mean, I'd have to say it was around January of last year when the Scarlett Johansson SodaStream thing exploded in the press with the Super Bowl. That all of a sudden, it really became front page news. And you could see, and this takes us back to investment, you could see the stock started plummeting for SodaStream, which I personally think was just people having, you know, investors fearing, they're running off the sinking ship.
Right.
And then Netanyahu started, you know, he mentioned BDS or the boycott like 18 times in the AIPAC speech. John Kerry, I think in Munich, mentioned, you know, repercussions of not coming to a peace agreement and boycott, and everybody exploded because he said that. And all of a sudden, people just started really acknowledging and talking about the boycott movement, which was just, you know, people thought was fringe. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, now it's just every day. I think they called it recently, boycott movement responsible for 9/11. I think that was Netanyahu, a blood libel. I mean, Nazis. I mean, they're going crazy over there. But unfortunately, you know, they just changed their framing. They never changed their policies. That's what it seems like. So all these words, you know, I know they could, you know, turn this around pretty quickly if they changed some of their policies, the Israeli government.
Yeah, sure. Well, no doubt about that. And that's the thing. The reason they got to say, oh, Nazi this and that, is because they got to try to talk about anything but the occupation. And, you know, I was actually going to save that for the second segment because it could be such a long rabbit trail to go down. But I wonder if you had noticed, I guess you must have noticed, it seems to me that it seems like if I was a right-wing Israeli nationalist, I could come up with bogus excuses. I would call it security or something. I would say,
right.
Well, we have to have this occupation in the West Bank to prevent the terrible suicide bomber, some kind of nonsense. But
right.
Instead,
they say,
we're real good on gay rights. Oh, this, that, whatever. Like, I'm just supposed to pretend like I don't know that Palestinians exist. And I'm only supposed to think about how good Israeli Jews have it. Wow, what a great country you guys have. I almost forgot that the millions of people living in the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem have no rights at all. You almost
right.
got me with your little pink washing thing there.
Right. Well, you know,
and calling me a Nazi, boy, did that scare me off.
From my perspective, after years of being involved in this movement, I'd have to say the ad hominem attack, just the, you know, attack of the person and not the argument, is their number one tool in Israeli Hasbara, is always just demonizing your opponent. So what I see is this constant shifting of narrative and framing and the way it's all described, just a big PR fluff, but no changing of the policy. And the thing is until the policy is changed, this won't stop. There's not, you know, I always think about what Kennedy said, you can fool all the people all the time, but not, you know, you can't fool all the people all the time, but some of the people all the time. And this is just a completely unsustainable narrative going on over there. Nobody's going to believe indefinitely it's okay for people not to have rights and not to be equal. That's just not a share our values kind of American thing. So it's really exposing the truth and getting more and more Americans aware of what's going on over there, because we've just been inundated with this share our values kind of propaganda for decades, really. And we really don't share their values, because we are not an ethnic nationalist state. We are a civic nationalist state. So it's a huge difference.
Yeah. All right. All right. Hold it right there. It's Annie Robbins, editor at large at the Mondo Weiss blog, mondoweiss.net. And we're talking about the BDS. We'll be right back. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betray their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. Darrenscoffee.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Talking with Annie Robbins from the Mondo Weiss blog. That's mondoweiss.net. Phil Weiss and his merry band there. And we're talking about BDS, and we're talking about how it went from kind of a small little fringe sort of thing to now a big enough thing where bottom line reading businesses who don't have politics are looking at the cost and benefit of continuing to do business with Israel, the apartheid state. And this is really turning into a big thing. And I'm sorry to change the subject from Israel real quick, but it's just this breaking news that just came in. It's almost unbelievable in this climate. But as reported here at Mondo Weiss, a little bit off the subject there too, a Boehner aide, John Boehner's chief of staff, told the blacks, the Congressional Black Caucus in the House of Representatives, that we are doing you people a favor by allowing you to even be seated here. And so now there's a gigantic controversy, and of course, I'm lying. This was a Netanyahu aide said that to all the Palestinians in the Knesset. I'm reading that from mondoweiss.net. But just think about that for a minute. If John Boehner, or, you know, the leader of the Republicans in the House or the Senate, said that to Jews or blacks in the American Congress, that, you know, still, this is our country and you're only here at our pleasure and this kind of thing. Can you imagine? And that's where we left off at the break there, Annie, as you were saying, okay, yeah, shared values. You really want to enumerate them, because first and foremost, this is not an ethnic state. Maybe at one point it was, but it's not anymore. And in fact, in great measure, because Jews helped other minorities win those battles and make sure that it's not anymore.
Wow, it's interesting you should bring up that story. I actually haven't read the story on Mondo Weiss, but I did read it at Haaretz the other day. It was an outrageous event that happened at the Knesset. I'm terrible at pronouncing that word.
It's okay, me too.
As I recall, they were this completely racist law, one of the many of the 60, which that have passed, and it's it prevents people from it prevents Palestinian people from having their their loved ones or their mates or their husband and wife or family live with them in Israel, if they come from, say, the West Bank or even East Jerusalem. And, you know, it's just completely racist laws. So this was coming, it was apparently some sort of temporary measure when it was first applied. And I think that was 13 years ago. Excuse me, but I don't have this information right in front of me. So with coming up for they just keep reestablishing it the same way with administrative detention, for example, where they just randomly arrest you with no charges or anything and then just keep you until they sort of want to, I don't know, find something against you. And then they just reestablish that over and over and over and over again. So it's the same kind of policy. And I believe they were having a debate about it. And this guy said, you know, you're lucky to be here. It was a huge screaming match took place. You've got to see the video of it, which I'm sure must be up at our site by now. Just go to the front page. And it's just outrageous. The stuff that goes on there, it's like nothing you could imagine. In fact, I think Phil and Adam wrote a great article the other day about it was sort of a farce on what's happening with our Confederate flag and the debate in this country, and that if that were going on in Israel. And it would just never happen there, because any kind of debate, because they don't recognize the well, they must recognize it, but they completely accept this sort of ethnic supremacy going on over there, where people have just completely different rights. And they keep saying they don't, but of course. Yeah.
Well, and I think this gets us back to the BDS thing here. This is what's really helped, I guess, to push the BDS along, is that the myth of the peace process is now finally dead. Nobody believes that the Israeli government ever means to negotiate away their rule over the occupied territories.
Exactly.
And so everybody is asking, so now what? Because it's either force march them all into the Jordan River or down into Egypt or into the Sinai Peninsula or some kind of thing, maybe kill them all or, you know, try and Trail of Tears style, which is something that I guess is over the line for politics in Washington. I like to think it is. Or their other choice is to just keep the status quo forever, which, you know, mankind, mostly other than the middle part of North America and Israel itself agree is just not tenable for them to, where half the population is ruled with no rights whatsoever under the authority of their prime minister.
Yeah, the so-called peace process was just a process that just pushed this down. It was the pushing it down the road was the process itself. So that as long as Israel was involved in this in one way or another, then, you know, then they could say, well, it's going somewhere. But it was just getting worse. And of course, they're just eating up more and more and more of the land as this process goes on. But, you know, that's just kind of the mask has been pulled off that, certainly at the last election, this last 9 months that happened last year, it just became apparent with the whole, I think Kerry said, the poof moment, that they were just never going to be naming their borders. They just refused to put a proposal together. And just recently, there's this new sort of Hasbarah, so to speak, that Netanyahu really wants to begin this negotiation process again, which is ridiculous. It's just a recycling of the no partner for peace thing, because repeatedly they refuse in any kind of negotiation to put a proposal of borders on the table. It's always a final status issue or something like that. It's just never, you know, the quartet over and over, 2012, before, always asking them, well, what borders? And they won't do it. Mm-hmm. So people nobody believes, especially now with the most racist, parliament there's ever been over there, people just don't believe that this is an option anymore. So really what you're looking at is you're looking at just saying, well, just make it okay that these people don't have rights. Okay, it's not that big of a deal. We'll make their economy better or something. It's just ridiculous. You just can't get people to agree that it's okay that people can live with generations and generations of with no rights.
Right.
You know,
well,
dragging
when the arguments,
your kids out of the bed in the middle of the night and stuff like this.
Yeah, I mean, it is just, I'm kind of insulted by the low quality of the argument, you know? Oh, yeah, so there's Jim Crow apartheid rule in the South, but us white people in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. live great. And so isn't that a great argument? I mean, who's buying that? That doesn't make any sense. Look, Israeli Jews in Tel Aviv have a great life. And so that somehow is a stand-in for an argument for the perpetuation of the occupation in the West Bank. It's not working on me. I'm sorry.
Well,
they're trying.
The argument has always been, really based on the central theme is demonize the other people. You know, they're terrorists, they're like this, it's all their fault. You know, and that's been going on for so long. And I think, you know, back before the internet, you know, so last century or whatever, that might have, like, worked on the public. But now we've got these kids that, you know, unlike myself, that, you know, grew up with Martin Luther King Day in kindergarten, literally, and grew up with this dream that this was represented America. And so they're just like, you know, even if you're maybe 13, 14, 15, 16, whatever age you are, when you start hearing about this over there, it's like, those kids, they're smart. They're like, what? You know, it's just not a sustainable, argument at all, because there is no argument other than these guys are all demons, you know, or it's all their fault, or, you know, blame the victim. I mean, there's just no meat in the argument at all. And because Israel continues to refuse to change their policies, in fact, their policies just keep getting worse and worse and more embedded and steeped in this racism. I don't know. It's just, the more you look at it, the more you expose it, the more people see the truth or read about it or just, you know, peel the layer behind it. It's just this big, ugly mess.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's so challenging, I think, of why they're having, you know, Sheldon Adelson is having, like, conferences in Las Vegas to counter BDS, is because they just keep trying to come up with, you know, these PR gambits. But, you know, there's just no putting lipstick on that pig.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing about it. And you're totally right about the internet there. You know, I grew up watching from the time I was a little kid. I always watched Tom Brokaw and Rather and Jennings, too, and the PBS NewsHour, that kind of thing with my dad. And never in my life have I seen on TV where they throw up a picture, a map, a bird's eye view of Israel and say, now this part here is the occupied territory here. And that's where they lost in 1967 and they've been occupied ever since. And this is what they're working on. Now, sometimes they'll talk about the peace process, this and that, but only on the assumption that, hey, you better already know what we're talking about, because we're never going to explain it to you who's occupying who. And they always frame it, and Phil and I have talked about this on the show many times too, they always frame it that, oh, it's land for peace, as though we start out with Israel rightfully owns some land, and they're under this terrorist threat that if you don't give up some of this land to us, then we're going to wage terrorist attacks against you all the time. And that is the way the entire issue is framed to certainly the talk radio right in America, and I think just most Americans in general. But then we get to what you're talking about, and especially with Web 2.0, Facebook and Twitter, there's just no arguing that the people of Gaza have Israel under siege. Now, you could try to say that, and maybe in 1992 it would have worked, but it just does not work now. And especially, I think, last summer's slaughter, canned hunt against the people of Gaza there was the real turning point of turning points, and Twitter even more than Facebook or anything else, because you just had people with 3G phones in Gaza. They take a picture, they tweet it, and it gets retweeted, and all of a sudden they have an equal voice with Jake Tapper on CNN. They have just as much coverage as he does as far as getting the truth out to people. Hey, here's what my neighborhood looks like now. Does that look like a surgical strike to you? And then, no, it doesn't.
Last summer was so horrifying. I was in Lebanon at the time, and I was so petrified. I could not write a thing, and I just started. I woke up, you know, of course, the bombing campaigns, which would begin, you know, when it first started after midnight, and whole families being taken out. And, you know, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and everybody in the house where I was in was just, you know, we were just glued to the television. And I go on the Twitter, and I'm seeing at the same time at 10 in the morning, like, protests breaking out in Chicago, and I just got goose pimples and just started crying and started collecting all these photographs. And so mostly I collected photographs of protests. And right now I think that that particular article, Worldwide Protests against the
I remember
slaughter
it
in
well,
Gaza,
yeah.
I forget the name, but it ended up being, I think, one of our heaviest traffic of the year last year. But there were literally hundreds of protests going on all over the world. People just every single weekend going out, and not in different places. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, the same like London and Amsterdam and, you know, all these going out weekend after weekend after weekend with these groups just growing. I mean, you know, South Africa just, you know, huge, a million people protest. And it was really, I think the whole world was just so horrified by it. You just can't hide that kind of gruesomeness. And then the excuse is like, well, look what's happening in Syria. It's like, excuse me?
Yeah.
You know, excuse me? If we were blatantly, outwardly funding billions of dollars to ISIS, that's really the equivalent of, in my opinion, the equivalent of our government funding this kind of slaughter. Yeah. And, you know, but I don't know. I just can't explain it. They say, well, why not Syria? It's like, hello, are we supporting that? You know, and well
and
yeah,
even besides the point, the worst civil war in the world is the model, and anything less than that is fine.
I know these people supposedly share our values, and we're you know, but at the same time, when we're over there, I mean, I can't even get into it. It's hard, you know, my opinion about what's happening over in Syria and Iraq. It's just,
I mean, we don't want to go too far afield, but yeah. I think the real point is that things have really changed here, and that's why all the screaming and hollering and accusing BDS of doing 9/11 and accusing BDS of you know, the death camps in Poland or, you know, whatever else they can try to do is because they've got no argument. They can only change the subject, and I think that's wearing real thin. I think things are really changing here, you know, as you're writing about. And as you said, this Alison Degger piece where Palestine is officially seeking to charge Israel with apartheid and war crimes.
Exactly. And you know, she's over there. I haven't read anything in the mainstream media as complete as that article, and it's exclusive on our front page right now. I would recommend everybody see it. Also, our correspondent in Gaza, Dan Cohen, is excellent, excellent coverage. So, you know, I mean, not to plug our site too much, but I love our site, and I just love it.
Yeah, no, it's great. I read it every day, and I sure hope everybody else does too. And with that, we're over time. I'm going to finally let you go, but thank you so much for coming on the show.
It was really an honor. I'm so pleased you called me.
It was great to have you on. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
All right, y'all. That is Annie Robbins. She is editor-at-large of Mondo Weiss. That's the great Philip Weiss, mondoweiss.net. And there's a whole bunch of great writers there, too, so go check them out. We'll be right back in a sec. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Yeah, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And yeah, here, I mentioned it before. I really should play this clip for you here. So, you know, I can prove it. Here's Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador, Benjamin Netanyahu's ambassador to the United States, speaking right about just 1 year ago, after the fall of Mosul, after the declaration of the caliphate in the country formerly known as Iraq, or the countries formerly known as Iraq and Syria, speaking with Jeffrey Goldberg in Aspen to the Fancy Pants crowd, but it's on YouTube. Just type in Oren, Sunnis.
We have to choose the lesser of evils here. The lesser evil is the Sunnis over the Shiites. It's an evil, believe me. It's a terrible evil. Again, they've just taken out 1,700 former Iraqi soldiers and shot them in a field. But who are they fighting against? They're fighting against the proxy with Iran that's complicit in the murder of 160,000 people in Syria. You can just, you know, do the math. And again, one side is armed with suicide bombers and rockets. The other side has access to military nuclear capabilities. So from Israel's perspective, if there's got to be an evil that's going to prevail, you know, let the Sunni evil prevail.
There you go. And never mind that it was the Al-Qaeda guys that knocked our towers down. The Islamic State that, you know, we're at war with right now. Not because they actually ever attacked us, but anyway. They claim Osama. They don't claim Zawahiri. They don't listen to Zawahiri, but they claim that they're the true heirs of Osama, not him. And he makes it clear, hey, yeah, I know, believe me, we're talking about, we just watched them massacre a bunch of Shiites. By the thousands, they're massacring them just for being Shiites. So, yeah, no, you're right, that's evil, but guess what? On the other side, and then he goes on to blame Assad for all the deaths on all sides in the civil war. The one that he would have won a long time ago at a much lower cost if it hadn't have been for America, Israel, Turkey, Saudi, Qatar intervening on the side of the jihadist rebels. And then he says, oh, and the other side, they have nuclear military technology. Shut up. What a stupid and ridiculous lie. You know, see, the people of Israel, do they not mind? I mean, I guess it's just no different than here, but it does seem a little bit more, a couple of percentages more of what they say over there, the politicians there, just complete lies. It seems like if you're going to lie to people, you got to give them a partial truth or something, or else you're going to piss them off. You're telling me that Iran, that I know for a fact that everybody knows, does not have military nuclear technology at all, would just in effect already have turned that military technology, that nuclear technology, over to Hezbollah and Syria to use against Israel, huh? Oh, I guess it is a no-brainer if you, you know, consider what you have to have in your brain to believe, in your head, I meant to say, to believe that line of crap. And so you notice what he doesn't say in there. Now listen, I know it was bin Ladenites that blew up the World Trade Center and the Khobar Towers and the Africa embassies and the USS Cole and 3,000 Americans on 4 planes and 2 towers and the Pentagon too on 9/11. But, sorry, Israel's all that matters to me, folks. He doesn't say that. He doesn't admit that. He would just have you forget that Iran had nothing to do with that attack. Hezbollah, Syria, had absolutely nothing to do with that attack. The Iranians held at least hundreds of thousands of people. They claimed it was a million-man thing, but it was, you know, better than 100,000 people came out in Tehran and did a candlelight vigil for the Americans on the night of the 12th. But hey, you know, screw you. So from Israel's point of view, ISIS, the head chopper, lunatics, they're friends in the Al-Nusra Front. Oh, they're kissing cousins in the Al-Nusra Front that crucify their enemies to death, chop their heads off for believing in the wrong religion. Oh yeah, no, they're the lesser evil compared to the Islamic Republic of Iran. The only gain that they've made in this century has been because Netanyahu and his men helped to convince the American government to get rid of Saddam Hussein for them. It's the clean break policy of David Wurmser and Richard Pearl from 1996. Netanyahu came to America and demanded that we go to war against Iraq. He testified before the Congress. He went on all the Sunday morning news shows. It's got to be done. And that's the only thing that's really empowered Iran in this century, is America doing what Israel wanted. There's a great article. You'll laugh your ass off, I swear to God. It's called How Chalabi Conned the Neocons. It's about how the Iranians, according to the CIA and the DIA, the Iranians sent Ahmed Chalabi to lie to the American Zionists, the Israel lobby, and especially their leaders in the neoconservative movement, to convince them that getting rid of Saddam would be good for Israel, when he was working for the Ayatollah all along. And, you know, as Patrick Coburn would say, hey, Chalabi was working for himself. Yep, and he was just feeding lies right to Eli Lake, who was just grubbing him down like everything else. Stuff, stuff, stuff his gullet, and then repeat it. Same for Jeffrey Goldberg. And many other pro-Israel tools in the media. The entire neoconservative movement, really. Weekly Standard, National Review, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post. And, of course, their fifth column inside the U.S. government. In the Pentagon, the State Department, the Vice President's Office, and the National Security Council. As Justin Raimondo wrote in USA Today, before the war ever started, when these soldiers come home in coffins, let it be inscribed on their tombstone, they died for Ariel Sharon. And in fact, and Sharon was certainly for it and certainly helped them lie into war. Read Agents of Influence by Robert Dreyfus in The Nation. But, you know, J.J. Goldberg at The Forward actually wrote a thing recently about how it was Netanyahu, much more, who was not in power at the time, but, you know, was he was some kind of minister, but lower down, official of the Likud party anyway. This is before the split of Likud and Kadima. It was Netanyahu, much more than Sharon even, who wanted America to invade Iraq and get rid of Saddam. And it was all because he was a tool. All because Chalabi was whispering sweet nothings in these idiots' ears. And there's even, well, just read the article, How Chalabi Conned the Neocons. I know I say that all the time, but only because you gotta read it. It's hilarious. I mean, it's tragic, but it's just, man. Anyway, but so, I guess now that's why America's supposed to prefer to fight for its enemies against Israel's enemies. Because, oops, we empowered Iran too much. And so now we got to, you know, do whatever it takes, including the highest of high treason, in order to counteract that terrible mistake. It's crazy. As Raimondo put it in his article at antiwar.com the other day, yeah, they're just relying on ignorance, man. They're relying on you to buy that, oh, Islamic extremism and them Arabs and blah, blah, blah. Don't you get specific now about who's on whose side here, or else it'd be clear real quick that America is on the side of Al-Qaeda in Syria and the Islamic State, for that matter, in Syria and in Yemen. And, well, I don't know if we're really helping them in Libya, but certainly fought a war for them in Libya, leading to a situation where they're doing just fine there right now, doing worse than ever before. Very well may have been them that attacked the Tunisian beach resort. They're already saying that the bomber in Kuwait was with the Islamic State. They pulled the same kind of stunt on a Shiite mosque in Saudi Arabia a couple of weeks ago, too, trying to sharpen those contradictions as they do. You see, the action is in the reaction. And so anyway, you may or may not have seen the clip, but at one point, the 9/11 Commission chair asked the FBI, why do they do it? They ever say what their motive was? And the gumshoe, just plain old non-political FBI agent, says, and you can look it up on YouTube there, he says, well, they identify with the Palestinians. That was why Mohammed Atta did what he did, because of American support for Israel's occupation.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. You know, I had that clip right here all along. Here it is.
I'm interested in the question of motivation of these hijackers. My question is really directed to the agents. But what have you found out about why these men did what they did. What motivated them to do it?
I believe they feel a sense of outrage against the United States. They identify with the Palestinian problem. They identify with people who oppose repressive regimes. And I believe they tend to focus their anger on the United States.
There you go. That's actually the only thing I know about the 9/11 Commission report right there. And I don't even know if that's in there. I think it is in a footnote somewhere in the back. Lee Hamilton asked the FBI agents. And boy, they all look at each other. If you watch it on YouTube, they'll look at each other like, man, I don't want to say it. Does anybody want to say it? And the one guy's like, I don't care. You know, they identify with the Palestinian problem. Yeah, they're not free. You know, again, at Mondo Weiss today, interview with a suicide bomber. Interview with a suicide bomber? Yeah, his bomb malfunctioned, wounded him. He lived. Now it's years later. And this guy interviews him. He was 17 at the time. And so Dan Cohen from Mondo Weiss interviews this guy. And he asks him, so man, why would you do that? Why would you be a suicide bomber? And I know you'll be shocked. He doesn't say anything about being jealous of the Israelis' freedom. He doesn't say anything about being jealous of anyone's freedom or hating the fact that someone else is free, because he hates freedom for everyone, even himself too. So it's not jealousy. It's just a hatred of things that are good because his religion makes him that way. That's just not in there anywhere at all. His life sucked. He had no reason to believe it was ever going to get any better. It was in the second intifada. He didn't have a right to his own life, so he decided he would do what desperate people do sometimes. And then they go on to cite Robert Pape, dying to win the strategic logic of suicide terrorism. It's not depression. It's altruism. I'm not saying it ain't evil. It's evil. But it's done out of a selfless motive. It's like, it's the same thing as a guy jumping on a grenade to save his buddies. I'm not saying morally it's the same thing. I'm saying in the, from the frame of mind of the person doing it, they're doing it for others. Not just because, oh, boo-hoo, I feel like slitting my wrists and getting in the bathtub kind of thing. It's, it's kamikaze. You think the kamikazes were motivated by Islamic extremism? Hell, not even Shinto extremism, right? A lot of them were Buddhist, too. But it was a last-ditch effort to protect their homeland from imminent invasion. Same thing happened in Vietnam. There's a clip of this in, is it Full Metal Jacket, I think? No, it's not. It's, maybe it's Platoon. No, which one is it where Oliver Stone gets suicide bombed? Is it Born on the 4th of July? Where he's the officer, he's like a captain in a tent, they're looking at maps, and a guy runs in there, a Vietnamese guy runs in there, strapped with a bomb and blasts him. Again, not Islamic extremism. Not, I believe in Muhammad so much that now I hate everything that is good, true, beautiful, and innocent. And North American. Nope. Occupation. That's what it is. It's occupation. Same thing as in Sri Lanka, where you had a fight between nominal Buddhists, but who were actually atheist communists, and Hindus on the other side. Not a Mohammedan in sight. Suicide attacks all over the freaking place. It's the occupation. It always was the occupation. And I'm sorry to say that, like, you stupid or whatever, but man, if you don't already get that, and it's 2015, then we got a real problem here. History didn't begin on September 11th. And look, I mean, look at where we are now. Support for the Israeli occupations of the West Bank, Gaza Strip, East Jerusalem, and at that time, southern Lebanon, they brought on the September 11th attack. And you look at all the consequences that have come from that, and all the horrible things that were done in the name of it and under the excuse of it. And now we're at the point where the Israelis are outright backing Al-Qaeda in Syria, where Israeli Druze, that's D-R-U-Z-E, which is a sort of kind of break off of Shiism, Israeli Druze have been attacking Israeli ambulances where they're treating Al-Qaeda. Because Al-Qaeda on the other side of the border in Syria is killing Druze for being Druze. So Israeli Druish, I guess, is that it? Like on Spaceballs? Israeli citizens have started attacking Israeli military ambulances. Stop providing aid and comfort to the cousins of the September 11th attackers, they insist, but Israel persists. Yeah, read it in the news. Oh, they're our greatest ally in the whole wide world. Well, they might be the greatest ally of the neoconservative movement in Washington, D.C., but that ain't the American people. And anyway, so you got to hear the clip. There's the FBI agent who did, in charge of the investigation of the September 11th hijackers, who they were and what they were about. And what they were about, as Terry McDermott writes in his book, Perfect Soldiers, they were about avenging the Palestinians and the Lebanese. It was during Operation Grapes of Wrath in southern Lebanon that Mohammed Atta filled out his last will and testament and joined up the terrorists. No different than Americans who join the army after September 11th. You're killing my kind, I'm going to join up the war against you. These are the kinds of things that young men do. And that's what it was for the September 11th hijackers. You can read all about the Hamburg cell. Terry McDermott did great work. All about the Hamburg cell. And all they would do is sit around all day talking about how Americans must pay for what Israel is doing in Lebanon. Right? When not one out of a million Americans even has any idea that America is paying Israel and arming Israel to kill Lebanese. They don't know anything about it. They don't know the first thing about it. But the bin Ladenites say, hey, you keep paying your taxes that keep going to Israel to keep killing these people, so I'm making you a target. And no one will ever, not that I'm not saying that's justified or anything, but just that nobody ever tells the American people the truth about it. Is this a price you're willing to pay? Not for the existence of Israel in peace, but for their occupation, endless murder, militarization, and reduction of human populations to helot slave status. Is that you're willing to pay that price or not? You know, right after the church massacre last week in South Carolina, there was an arson fire at the Church of the Multiplication in the occupied territories where Jesus supposedly divided the loaves and the fishes, and right-wing Israeli Jews attacked it. If a Muslim had done it, you'd call it a terrorist attack and freak out, right? But it was the Christians in Palestine are Palestinian, not Israeli. They're on the victim end, so of the Israelis, so you don't mind. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Ah, man. I don't have Mark Perry's number. How the hell did I talk to him last time? We're not Twitter friends, and I don't have an email from him, and he's not in my Twitter messages. I have talked to him on Twitter before, but I don't see it here in my old Twitter messages. You know, the direct message thing on there? Ah, jeez. That's really too bad, man. I bet I'll hear from him in time to interview him for at least 10 minutes, though. That's cool. And you know what? I got plenty of news to talk about. I always go on too long about things. Oh, here I found his Twitter messages. Let's see if I can. Got a phone number there. Nope. God dang it, Bobby. All right. Well, anyway, check this out, man. I want to play for you this audio real quick anyway. This is the former deputy director of the CIA, Michael Morell, being interviewed ever so softly by Vice magazine, but I wanted you to hear just this clip here.
I don't like calling it torture, right, for one simple reason. because to call it torture says my guys were torturers, right? And they were told that they weren't. They were told that what they were doing was legal. And I'm going to defend my guys to my last breath.
That's it. That's his argument. As famous Twitterer Bill Mon, the former blogger, put it. Oh, man, how casual. It's like he's reading from a random page out of Catch-22 by Joseph Heller. The reason I don't want to call it torture is because that means that the people who did it are torturers, and they're my guys, and I don't want them to get in trouble. Okay, how very frank of you. So, in other words, you admit it's torture. That's your last excuse for not calling it torture, which we all already know is a felony in America, to torture somebody. Is that right? It seems like, who the hell does this guy think he is? Jeb Bush? You haven't practiced this answer? You're going to give an interview? You know they're going to ask you about torture. That's the best you can get? You're not going to tell me, come on. It's not like they drowned them all the way to death. It was just, they would drown them to where they were almost dead. And I don't think that really counts. Go ahead and give us a good argument. But that's your argument? Well, I don't want to call it torture because everybody knows torture is a felony and I don't want to get in trouble. Oh, well, in that case, I mean, seriously, man, am I being hyperbolic here? Listen to the words that the man says.
I don't like calling it torture, right, for one simple reason. Because to call it torture says my guys were torturers, right? And they were told that they weren't. They were told that what they were doing was legal. And I'm going to defend my guys to my last breath.
That's it. Hey, I know I'm lying. I know I'm being stupid. I'm denying the obvious truth right in everyone's face. Of course it's torture. But I will never call it that. Because my loyalty to my torturers comes first. Okay. A German Nazi couldn't have said it better. Somebody from Saddam Hussein's Mukhabarat could have expressed it exactly the same way. Hey, for that matter, any Republican or Democrat politician in America pretty much would have said it the same way. And yeah, by the way, if you ever hear anybody talk, oh, a little bit of waterboarding is a kind of simulated drowning. Huh. What does that mean? Like they put on some Lawnmower Man virtual reality glasses and show you what it might be like? This is a simulation of drowning. Yeah, no, it's where they drowned you almost to death. And they had doctors there with the little oxygen sensor that they put on your finger. You know those? They'd have the doctors there monitoring the level of oxygen in their blood, making sure that they were fully into the death spiral, as they call it, as their body completely begins to, gets into the shutdown process. And then only then, after seeing the light at the end of that tunnel to hell, only then you flip them back upright. Slug them in the gut, knock the water out of their lungs, and then start doing it again. Oh, yeah, but it's not torture or anything. It would be torture if it was exactly what the Japanese did to American POWs. It would be torture if it was exactly what the communist devil Pol Pot did to the innocent people under his dictatorship in Cambodia. Hey, it'd be torture if Ronald Reagan's attorney general prosecuted a Texas sheriff for it in 1983. But don't call it torture to Michael Morell. Why? Because he's friends with the torturers and he doesn't like talk like that. And his first job is to protect them. Not obey the law or serve the truth or the American people.
I don't like calling it torture, right, for one simple reason. Because to call it torture says my guys were torturers, right? And they were told that they weren't. They were told that what they were doing was legal. And I'm going to defend my guys to my last breath.
Right, right. Remember in the Senate report, it said that the Pentagon spokesman, was it Scott McConnell? Said, hey, look, press corps, we're treating all the people in our captivity humanely. The CIA panicked and sent memos back home saying, hey, what's all this crap about we're treating people humanely? Are you guys throwing us under the bus? Are you saying now that that torture's not your official policy and that we're outside the law? You better have our back. You better not be saying that we treat people humanely, because we sure as hell don't. That's in there. It's in the Senate report. Oh my God, everybody. Did you hear what the White House spokesman said today? He said that we're not torturing people. Oh my God. Hey, Dave, you better call back to the office and make sure we're still good. Yeah, you know, they thought that they weren't torturing someone because they had been told that what they were doing wasn't torture. And so, you know, what responsibility of it? What responsibility could they possibly have for it? It's not like they're over 18 adult human beings who know good and damned well what torture is and that it's illegal in the United States of America. Whether Adolf Bush or anybody else told you that his will to power can override that law or not. And anyway. I don't know, man. I like the gaffes. I like it when they accidentally admit the truth about what they're doing and what's going on here. All right. And now, by the way, remember I talked to you briefly about this piece by Alan Cooperman in the New York Times the other day and how it was a complete piece of crap. Well, here it is, debunked at armscontrol.org, where they say that this guy Cooperman is way out ahead of the facts. He makes a number of flawed assumptions and charges that the nuclear agreement with Iran would only increase the so-called breakout time. Among the errors in his piece, not comprehensive, he assumes Iran could immediately, and isn't this exactly what I told you? He assumes Iran could immediately reassemble, reinstall, recalibrate, and begin to operate the centrifuges, remove the IAEA seals, whatever, and as they say, that ignores the fact it would take many months, if not years, to do that. And of course, it would be detected and could be disrupted within days of any such effort beginning. Isn't that exactly what I told you the other day? And then same thing here. They say he's got his numbers wrong about how much uranium metal they'll be allowed to have. And of course, I was still right that they wouldn't be able to reconvert it to gas without everybody knowing. And more. Anyway, armscontrol.org for the final debunking there. Or a great one, anyway. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, man. I'm Scott. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Well, so, it's a top headline on antiwar.com right now. Have U.S. tactics played into Islamist hands? Oh, yeah. It'll be probably the spotlight, but it'll be one of the viewpoints over the weekend at antiwar.com as well. It's, the heroic Patrick Coburn. He's the only person for bombing the Islamic State that I can tolerate, because he's Patrick Coburn. He's so great on it. And what the hell are you going to do? I appreciate that he's not an ideological, absolutely opposed type in a way, just because he's a reporter. His job is reporting. So if he deviates a little bit and says, yeah, I kind of like it when people drop bombs on these ISIS guys, yeah, I can shade my eyes and look away. I don't mind when the ISIS guys die either. But boy, I sure don't want the Americans running this thing. And anyway, in this article, he doesn't talk anything about, you know, what America should do to defeat them or anything objectionable like that. It's not in there. He's just explaining. Well, the lay of the land a year into this mess. That's basically what it is. How many men they got, how much money they got, how strong they are, where they've lost and where they've made gains. And I think it's pretty clear that they're not going anywhere. We're just going to be the Islamic State from now on. And, I don't know. I don't care. I like Stephen Walt's piece in Foreign Policy about this. He says, we can contain them. I told you about this the other day, right? Yeah, they freaked out when the communists took over Russia, tried a regime change right away. It didn't work. Yeah, we live with them, and, I mean, it sucked for the people locked in the Soviet Union for 70 years, but for the rest of us, yeah, we survived. Same thing with the refusal to recognize Mao's government in China, etc., etc., but are the Islamic State any more crazy than the Saudi kings? Are they any more irresponsible with their power than the Israelis, the Turks, or any other allies in the region? So, yeah, what the hell? Why not just contain them? The damage is already done. George Bush already invaded Iraq in 03. And in fact, there was one point where I guess he could have just immediately turned around and left. Or in January 2004, when the Ayatollah Sistani said, I want one man, one vote. Everybody who believes in God wants one man, one vote. Don't we, everybody? And every Shiite in Iraq went outside and said, yeah, like the Ayatollah said, one man, one vote, democracy, 60% supermajority. You could call him the Iraqi Likud. And at that point, George Bush could have said, no way, I'll go right back to war against all of you too. I don't give a damn. We're not doing that. But he didn't. He said, oh, geez, okay. I guess the U.S. Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, etc., CIA are all at your disposal now, Iran. Oh, you want us to kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad for you? Okay. As long as we can call it a victory. And so, yeah, what are you going to do? I'm not saying that the, you know, Saddam's dictatorship, that he had the right to rule the Shia or anything like that. I'm just saying these are the consequences of America intervening there, turning all of Western Iraq into Jihadistan for a dozen years. And then Obama, you have to admit, you know, what Bush did for Osama bin Laden in invading Iraq and turning all of Western and Northwestern Iraq, Sunni, you know, dominated Iraq, into Jihadistan. As huge as that was, and I think it's about equivalent in hugeness, it still seems to me like what Obama has done in Libya and Syria is so much worse, because it's not accidentally benefiting our enemies, it's directly siding with the enemies of the American people. And I'm a Lysander Spoonerite on treason. You ever read No Treason? It's called that. He's not saying, hey, you don't commit treason. He's saying, what treason? I don't owe you any allegiance in the first place. Fair. I'm totally with that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who are government officers sworn to the Constitution. And Barack Obama and his cabinet, they're guilty of treason. He could have told Hillary Clinton on the first day, you want to back the Mujahideen in Libya and Syria? I'll take your resignation, please. And instead, he let her do it. You know, it's on him. The whole cabinet. I think they're more guilty than Bush. And what Bush did, I mean, charge him with 1.5 million counts of murder. He's guilty. And his cabinet, too. But Obama's guilty of outright legal definition, technical definition, high treason. Let's see those findings on covert action in Syria. We don't even need them. We already know. Well, I just want to give, you know, some weapons to some guys, but not too many, too much. As he told Ben Swan when he asked about, how come you're bombing Al-Qaeda in Yemen but supporting them in Syria, Mr. President?
I share that concern, and so what we've done is to say we will provide non-lethal assistance to Syrian opposition leadership that are committed to a political transition, committed to an observance of human rights. We're not going to just dive in and get involved with a civil war that, in fact, involves some elements of people who are genuinely trying to get a better life, but also involve some folks who would, over the long term, do the United States harm.
Oh, my God. Is that guy tiresome or what? Oh, that was a long way of saying, yeah, we're back on the mythical moderates, even though we know all the money and guns. Oh, yeah, and the non-lethal, yeah, that means guns, too. They've admitted that over and over. I mean, CIA and now military, too, training and arming and funding jihadists. It means zillions of dollars from our allies, the Saudis, the Qataris, coordination with the Turkish military at a joint Saudi-American base on the Turkish side of the border there. As Jonathan Landay has reported, he's seen these guys being trained in Jordan. And as Coburn has explained, there ain't no moderates. They ain't moderate. There are different factions of Mujahideen fighters in Syria. None of them are moderate. Okay? The Al-Farouk Brigade, they said, oh no, man, we don't want a totalitarian Sunni jihadi dictatorship. We know that there are religious and other sectarian minorities here in Syria, and we want to protect their rights. We want to have elections. And hang on just one second. I'm going to eat this dead soldier's heart on film, said the leader of the moderate pro-democracy Al-Farouk Brigade, the cannibal. And then you had John McCain's favorites from the Northern Storm Brigade, who before he ever even went there, told Time Magazine on camera, their leader did, yeah, I'm a veteran of the Iraq War, which means he was a member of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, a Syrian who traveled to Iraq to fight and kill Americans. That means he was with Zarqawi's guys, or at least he certainly would have been categorized that way by the American military and government during that war. All John McCain had to do was Google Northern Storm, and the first result is Time Magazine, where there he explains. What does John McCain do? He goes over there and pals around with him. Wanted to spend the night. That's not a lie, I swear to you. That's from his people. That's what they told the Daily Caller. He wanted to spend the night. Until his security people said, no, we're getting the hell out of here, Mr. Senator. It turned out they were the ones who sold Stephen Sotloff to ISIS, who then cut his head off. See, they're the moderates. And Patrick Coburn asked the mythical moderates, the FSA that guys there in Turkey at the border, hey, what do you guys think of the September 11th attacks? Yeah, they said, more like that. Yeah, Ayman al-Zawahiri and al-Qaeda, yeah, we love them, man. Yeah, they're helping us. We're fighting Assad together. And they're not shy about it. And the FSA, they behead and crucify their prisoners, too. It's very moderate of them. And you can tell it's moderate because it's bipartisan in America, right? If the Democrats and Republicans are all for it, no matter how extreme it is, as long as it's centrist, it's moderate. Even if it's Al-Qaeda suicide bombers. It's very moderate. Like John McCain, the liberal Republican. He's a very middle-of-the-road kind of guy. He's for every extreme thing in the world. He's the voice of reason. The center, creating that bipartisan consensus we need to know that. We need so that we can know we're doing the right thing. All right. Sorry no Mark Perry today, everybody. Never got a hold of him. But anyway, see you Sunday morning. See you Monday afternoon.